Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast, is brought to you today in part by Audible, offering anytime, anywhere listening of your favorite audiobooks with the biggest selection ever, and it's all backed by Amazon. I am currently listening to The Stars Beneath Our Feet by David Barclay Moore, and it's one of those books that I'm seriously listening to every second I have the chance. The book follows Lolly Rajpal, a 12-year-old in Harlem. From the outset of the story, Lolly is struggling with the loss of his big brother to gang-related violence. It's Christmas, but this just isn't the time for celebrating. And yet, as we're pulled through the season, through the neighborhood, through Lolly's time at school, we see the complex strands crisscrossing through Lolly's life, holding it together and yet causing so much tension. Lolly constructs with Legos and he finds himself, his best self, while he's building imagined architecture and cityscapes out of colored bricks. But is a child of this city, and he soon is subject to a gang looking to recruit him. There's so much about Lolly's world that was new to me, experiences that I haven't had, and things I've never had to consider, and so much that drew me back over and over again, so much that was working in me as I listened and continue to listen. I highly recommend you read or listen to The Stars Beneath Our Feet as soon as possible. Audible's offering a one-month free trial to listeners of this podcast. Visit the show notes for this episode at allthewonders.com to start your free trial and support this podcast with the same click of a mouse or tap of a screen. I hope you'll go try it out and see for yourself. Happy listening. Meet Jared Reck and spend some time zooming in on the tiny moments of your life. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 402 of the podcast with Jared Reck. Jared's debut YA novel is called A Short History of the Girl Next Door. And at the time of recording this interview at the Baltimore Book Festival, it was just about launch day. What an incredibly exciting time to be an author. I was invited by Enoch Pratt Free Library to record a live on-stage episode of the All the Wonders podcast in front of an audience, too, actually. I'll share the second recording with you next week. Big shout-out to Tracy Diamond. Woo! Well, we had a hiccup with the recording equipment that we planned to use that day of this first recording, so I want to apologize up front for the sound quality. I cleaned it up as best as I could, and I think the conversation with Jared far and away outshines any AV issue. Plus, we were not without some, shall we say, unique interactions with the folks passing by the tent, but all of it made for a great live recording for a really awesome and moving book. I hope you'll enjoy. So, live from the Enoch Pratt Free Library Children's Stage at the Baltimore Book Festival, here's episode number 402 of the podcast with Jared Reck. Well, hi everyone, welcome to the Baltimore Book Festival. How are you today? Good, a little hot. Everybody got lunch in them. Everybody got some free books. I like it. I'm so excited. My name is Matthew Winter. I'm a local school librarian, and I'm also a podcast host. I have a children's podcast called All the Wonders. I'm so excited to be sitting down here with my friend Jared to talk about his brand new book, which you can pick up today, called A Short History of the Girl Next Door. Want to say hi, Jared?
Hello, everyone. Thanks for coming out.
Jared, tell us a little bit about you. I understand that you're a teacher in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so I teach 8th grade writing in Spring Grove, Pennsylvania. I live in Hanover, about an hour north of here. I've been teaching for, this is my 13th year, and I run my classroom as a reading writing workshop, and it's kind of where all of this came from, so I love what I do.
Wonderful. I love that you have written a book, and your children, the students, have gotten to see you write a book, and you, have they read the book yet? Have they had a chance?
I had, last year when I got the advanced reader copies in January, I had a handful of my 8th graders who I gave it out to, and I book talk it, and you know, you don't want to be too pushy, like, hey guys, I also wrote a book, you should read it and go order it. But I did have a couple of students who were really interested and read it and gave me awesome, awesome feedback. So they read the advanced copies, but I also, I write in front of my students as part of a writing workshop, so they've been seeing me work through the book writing process for years. So this book I finished actually writing 2 summers ago. So the group that saw me writing like towards the end of this would be juniors in high school now. So the groups I've had the past 2 years have been watching me write my second book. And my group of students that just started a couple weeks ago are watching me start the process of the third book I'm working on.
I love that. Well, let's talk about this first book. Congratulations on your debut, by the way.
Thank you.
It's no small feat to be a published author. And this is a book, for those that get a chance to pick it up, that is about a boy named Matt Wainwright, who, like most boys, maybe, like most freshmen, is pining after a girl. And in this case, he's pining after a girl that he's grown up with. He's known this girl his whole life. Anyone in the audience have a love that they loved for ever? Just felt like in middle school or high school, like you'd never get over this person? No, nobody. I'm the only one. Well, we can sit here. We can do therapy in
this
front of them if you want. We can sit and talk about
a lot of things
my friend Ashley, who was just everything to me. but Matt and Tabby, Matt sort of gets his heart crushed by falling in love with this girl that he's been best friends with forever, and then watching her start to date sort of the big guy on campus, the big popular guy on the basketball team. What else from the story? How else can we book talk this for people? How are you talking about your book to people that haven't read it yet?
Yeah, I start with the same idea. Like, I think most of us understand the feeling of unrequited love, whether people are admitting to it or not. And I think when I talk to my students, my 8th graders, I think it goes back really far. I think, you know, I remember elementary school, even in early middle school, those first unreciprocated crushes, and they sting, even as a kid, all the way up through the ones you hit probably high school or even a little later that are just all-consuming, all-encompassing, just soul-devastating crushes and pining that aren't reciprocated, the unrequited ones. And for Matt, like Matthew said here, for my main character, Matt, he's my funny, socially awkward, self-deprecating, basketball-playing main character. It is Tabby. It's the girl that he's grown up with, his best friend since they were children. You know, they've watched Star Wars marathons together on long summer days, and they've gone trick-or-treating every year of their lives together and dumped their candy on the floor at the end of the night to divvy it up. They ran make-believe restaurants together as little kids. So for Matt, at some point realizes that this is who he loves more than anyone. I like the soundtrack.
I was going to say, as you're
building,
getting to sort of the big point, it's building, but now it's changed. We're going to bring it down. I don't know if people listening on the recording can hear it. I'm just going to bring it down, and let's talk about Matt and Tabby. Oh, yeah.
This is the moment, actually. Matt realizes he's never going to be able to tell this girl how he feels because he's just way too in his head all the time. So as the book begins, and Tabby is picked up for a ride to school from this older, awesome guy.
Yeah.
Matt realizes, crap, it's over.
Leo,
and at first he's going to...
Right?
Yeah, Liam Branson.
Yeah.
And first he's going to lose Tabby to older guy, which sucks. And then he's going to lose her as a friend because he can't handle it. And then when he loses Tabby for good, he just spirals completely. And when I book talk with my kids at school, I book talk every day. But I always tell my kids, I love books that can make me laugh. But what I really love are books that can make me laugh and just rip my guts out. You know, I want to feel something when I read. I want to be left just a sniveling mess when I'm done. So while I hope that any of my students or anybody who reads this book will laugh and find parts really funny, I think secretly there's a dark part of me that hopes you will be left just a sniveling mess when you're done. You'll be just devastated by this. So I apologize for that.
Yeah, I don't know that you teach this craft to your writers. I'd imagine you would, though, that good writers can bring us in with humor and can bring us in, build our trust by showing us kids that we know or feel like we can relate to. And then when you've built that trust, you really have brought us to a place where we become emotionally attached to these kids or to their storylines, and then are vulnerable. I don't feel like I hate you for what you did to me, but I definitely felt what you did to me as an author and what it felt like you did to Matt. I wonder. So there's a significant plot point that happens in this story. This is a YA novel, I should say. Intended for a young adult audience. So while I would love to read aloud to you, I'm well aware of my elementary age students in the audience. And I will say, this book will be ready for you and will be waiting for you as soon as you get to middle and high school, and you'll love it when it does. Many of the things I wanted to read aloud today, many of the things I marked, I was like, oh, I don't think I can talk about that with 9-year-olds.
No.
But I felt like you as a teacher for 13 years, I'm hearing.
Yeah.
I've really listened to your students, not just in your class, but also you've listened to them in the halls. You've listened to them outside waiting to get picked up. You've really tried to listen and paint a picture not as adults see these children, but as these young adults see one another.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the nice things of working with 8th graders, with these 14-year-olds, you know, is just being immersed in that all the time. But I think one of the nicest things, selfishly, is that I've been able to use them as my beta readers for years. They've been getting it, you know, so I write in front of them, but it's usually in my classroom, little snippets at a time. And as a teacher, even long before I ever thought I could even attempt to write a novel, mostly what I want to do is make my kids laugh. That's always been my goal. So I know if I write something that can make a room full of 14-year-olds laugh, then I got it, then that works. Because they're more than willing to be honest with me if something is not working. So it's a great audience to have, and just to get that honest feedback from them just in the immediate time that it's written.
And I can hear you in the voice of the teacher in this story, who, in front of his students, he brings up a book by Sherman Alexie that many of you may have read. The mostly true story of a
part-time? Absolutely true diary absolutely of a part-time Indian.
I knew I would miss some of those words. In which you talk about one of the fart scenes. The
greatest fart scene of all of literature.
There it is. So that was you talking. I knew that it was you talking about the greatest fart scene in all literature. I feel like there are scenes in here that, knowing that reference point, felt like you were coming from that same place of, why would I not include, you know, like body part jokes or fart jokes? Because that's like how we talk.
That's and know
I,
your audience.
I value that.
A room full of 14-year-olds, that's solid gold.
Know your audience, know your writer.
And actually, that Mr. Ellis is not me. Like, he's kind of like the idealized form of me, and he's based on just an incredible teacher that I had growing up. But I use that book talk, talking about the greatest fart scene in all of literature. I book talk Sherman Alexie every year, because that is just a brilliant, life-changing book, especially for young adults. And that's exactly how I talk about it, that my friend and I, who's actually here, we went to see Sherman Alexie years ago in Frederick. It was right before he was going to the National Book Festival in D.C., and it was chosen that year as the One Maryland, One Book. So we went to see his performance, and he is just incredible and incredibly funny and awesome to listen to. And he would read parts of the book, and then he would just kind of talk about his life, because much of it was based on his own life. And at the end, after, you know, he was out in the lobby and we were waiting to get our book signed, I did ask Sherman Alexie, like, you know, I was really hoping you would read the tree scene at the end, this fart scene. And Sherman Alexie really did say to me, like, I would, but I can't get through it. Like, it's too emotionally charged for him to read that out loud without crying. And so I book talk that with my kids. Like, if you can write a scene about a fart that you can't read because it's going to make you cry, that's just, you've reached a totally different level than the rest of humans on Earth. And that's, you know, that's a big part of the book talk. So that shows up with Mr. Ellis's book talk in the book.
Are there any scenes in here, as you are now preparing, your book is in the world now, as you're preparing to share it with kids that you don't know, or maybe even during the time you were writing with kids that you do know, are there scenes that you felt like were too real, too hard to read in front of them? Are there? Do you have those similar scenes? They don't need to involve farts, but maybe you, maybe they do.
Actually, there's some later, again, without giving too much away, there's parts later in the book where Matt needs to just get away from his life for a while. He's got to take a time out and step away. And he ends up staying with his grandparents. That one does it. Because it's based a lot on my dad. That's the part.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Can I ask you, thank you for sharing that with us so that we can have that moment with you. Can I ask you what books you found that you connected with growing up or as you read to your children, your students, that you feel like are those important books you want to make sure in your life, full knowing that this story very well could end up being one of those stories for one of the kids that are even here at the festival today.
Yeah. One, I think, if I go way back, I think one of the earliest books that stands out in my mind is a Dr. Seuss book, actually. If we go way back, there's a book of his called Osei Can You Say, and it's a book of his tongue twisters. And so when I was in elementary school, probably up into like fourth grade, when I'm way too old to be exploring the blue dot section, you remember the blue dot section, that's where you go for like easy readers. And I'm way too old to be in this section of the library as like a fourth grader, but I had to get this book almost every time I was in the library because I would take this thing home and I would get my dad to read it. And every single time, there's one tongue twister maybe two-thirds of the way in called Pete's Pat's Pigs. And every single time, my dad would trip up about two-thirds of the way through Pete's Pat's Pigs. And every time, he would just bust out laughing. And he's a big dude. And so as a kid, he's just got this loud, contagious, just room-filling laughter. So that's like my earliest exposure with books is just I want to be around books that make me laugh. And so I think that's kind of always what I've been shooting for is just make people laugh because that's so ingrained in me from Dr. Seuss. As I'm thinking about books that I share with my kids, I book talk almost every single day, so it's hard to like pinpoint single ones that I think are life-changing. But for me, like authors, there's two that are kind of my writing heroes. One is Chris Crutcher, who I wish I would have known about as a middle school and a high schooler. He writes young adult fiction, and it's very real, and it always deals with usually sports involved, which I loved as a teenager. But it deals with really honest, hard-hitting issues in a very honest, powerful way. And I've read all of his books now. His first book came out in like 1983, so he's written a lot of books. He's won like the Margaret Edwards Award, I think, for just lifetime achievement from the ALA. So he's one I always book talk Crutcher. I've read all of his books multiple times each. And then the other one that's hugely impactful for me is A.S. King. He's another young adult author. Hers are just so hard to actually book talk because there's usually elements of like magical realism and they're weird. And it's hard to convey that to your eighth graders. Like, listen, just read it, okay? Just do it. It's going to change your life. Just read Everybody Sees the Ants. Trust me.
I haven't read that one.
Like my number one all-time favorite. But
nice.
Those are kind of, when I'm writing, they're what I'm striving for, like Chris Crutcher and A.S. King. That's like what I dream of.
So I want to talk about writing humor. And just by show of hands, how many of you enjoy reading humor? Right? Cool. I think that as a reader of humor, it often feels, when done well, like, well, the author must have just sat down and penned this, and then it was funny. But as a person that teaches writing, I know that it takes a lot of work and a lot of editing, and I would love to hear from you how you edit, but also keep your humor in. How do you keep an eye and an ear out for keeping the humor in your story?
That's a really good question. This kind of pertains, maybe humor is a huge part of this because that's what I'm going for, but really what I want is just emotional resonance in my readers, and I'm just usually shooting for humor. But I think to get that, at least for me personally, and it's something that I share with my students, there's a great writing quote just called, "In the particular lies the universal." And it's this idea of just the more you zoom in on really specific moments from your life or specific objects, the more people can connect to it. And for like young writers or novice writers, that's kind of counterintuitive. That, you know, I have a lot of eighth graders who want to write about big ideas like love and heartbreak and rejection and social isolation, like things that matter to you. But to get to that, you really have to zoom in on tiny, tiny moments and objects from your life. In the book, that comes across as like any given moment just might be perfect. So, and that's a lot of, when I try and hit the funny stuff with Matt in the book, it's these incredibly tiny particular moments of like trick-or-treating with Tabby and, you know, playing Animals, Animals, Animals with his little brother Murray and, you know, doing voices for these characters. They're just, you know, explaining them, they don't sound that funny. But in the particular moment, when you're zoomed in and just get to watch that, most of us have that connection.
Yeah.
When, like, the first week of school when I do writing territories, like brainstorming topics with my kids, I always stop because I give them mine first, and I've got my stuffed animals as a kid on my list, my loveys. And I make sure I stop. Every eighth grader in that room is going to tell me what their lovey was, and I'm going to call them out. I'm going to call my boys out if they tell me I didn't have one. Like, you're lying. You got something. You know where it's at right now. You got it tucked away, and you know its name. So spill it. And usually that kind of super specific connection, like, we can all laugh at that. Yeah. We can all, like, have an emotional impact with that. Like, that same stuffed animal that's really funny when you can talk about it can be used later on to just rip someone's guts out.
Of course. We talked about this before recording, but I want to bring it up. Let me set the scene. There's a scene where Matt is taking his younger brother out trick-or-treating. And Matt, being a freshman, would really love nothing more than just to throw on a mask and get candy. But what would mean a lot to Murray would be if he would dress up like this character. The mom has made the costume. And that would be if Matt would dress up as a mama eagle. So there's this wonderful scene where we go through him like, I'm not going to wear this Mama Eagle costume. You're going to crush your brother's feelings.
Right.
And then you have all of the family members coming in then. So Tabby comes in and like, oh, God, my best friend has to see me. The girl I love has to see me wearing this Mama Eagle costume. And then the grandparents pull in and everyone gets out their phones. And you get us to that beautiful place there with costumes. But where I want to go next is that they go out and have a wonderful time trick-or-treating. And as is the tradition year after year, the younger brother goes to bed and Matt and Tabby sit on the floor and separate all the candy. And they have this hierarchy of candy. I was trying to find it. I couldn't find it. Hierarchy of candy that we separate into. We might have someone in the audience who makes hierarchies of candy. What is at the top of your hierarchy of candy?
Chocolate.
Same as that.
Zoom in. In the particular lies the universal. What chocolate? What are we talking about? Are we Kit Kat? Are we...
Wow. Larger the filling. Chewy. So maybe
that
like a Snickers. We're looking for a Snickers. Yeah.
The three must. Okay. That's a solid choice.
Perhaps also there are parents in the room that have gotten out said trick-or-treating candy and pocketed some and went down to the basement and let somebody else handle the trick-or-treating. But as Matt, the beautiful scene, as Matt and Tabby are sorting out this candy, they do this hierarchy, but there's this one candy that's set apart.
Yeah, so for Tabby, in the book, Tabby is a nerd fiend. She loves the candy nerd, you know, the little candy nerds. So Tabby is just ravenous with these things. And they've known this since they were little kids. So every year when they've got their hierarchy of like, you know, you got your chocolate bars, and then you've got
gummies,
like chewy gummies and lollipops down to maybe like raisins at the bottom, whatever, that you just throw away. There's nerds. And so every year, nerds get pulled off to the side. They're so good, they exist outside the candy hierarchy for Tabby. Like, they're just, you can't rank them. They're just too important. So, and that, yeah, I use that later
on. Right. So, I want to bring up that later on, if you don't mind. Because of that, building trust with your audience, building trust with your readers, and also tapping into that microscopic experience to play on something so much larger. We brought up, and it's not spoiling anything, we brought up that Matt is pining after this this love interest that he's been close to her his whole life. And at some point, like a stupid high schooler, because we were all of us boys in the audience were stupid high schoolers. The women were obviously much more mature than we were going through high school. But at some point, Matt is trying to perhaps compensate for the attention that Tabby is getting from this other person on the basketball team, the senior on the basketball team. And to do so, he generates this list of 100. He ranks some of the girls in the school. That's as far as we'll go with that. And, of course, Tabby has to discover that list. She has to, in order for us to experience what Matt needs to go through. And what I couldn't find is this beautiful way you then had Matt bring us back to that candy and say, no, but you're the nerds to my candy stash. You are that person that's set apart. But there's not a way that I can communicate that I can't compare you to all of these other people because you're something else. And I thought that that was a really beautiful thing. And I thought that that was exactly what the story needed for the way you then drove his pain, the way you drove what he experiences.
Yeah, and that was Matt in one of his ugliest moments when things are not going how he wanted to. He's watching the girl that he loves and has been best friends with since they were children just be with this other guy. And I think one of the things I liked about the older guy, about Branson in the story, is that he's an amazing guy too. He's not
yes.
like the stereotypical just older jock, what you think of in like a bad 80s movie. Like, he's just a wonderful human being as well. He's an athlete. He's a great student. He's just a nice, nice person. It's the kind of person that Tabby should be with.
Absolutely.
So it's even more painful for Matt to watch this. And as Matt's like in his ugliest moment of trying to, like you said, compensate with this, he does create that list, not thinking anybody would ever see you. You wouldn't want anybody to see like you're just at your worst, at your darkest moments. That's the kind of stuff that gets filtered out when you walk out into the world. And for Matt, you know, Tabby's going to discover that and see through the filter. And that's the moment when Matt is most desperate. He always sees things as movies playing in his head, these dramatic movies that never work out that way. And I did the same thing as a kid. Like, you have the soundtrack playing in your mind, and it's going to be magic and perfect and special, and then it never, ever works the way you see it working. And in that moment, you know, just he's at a loss, and he just pops into his head, like, Tabby, you're the nerds. As Tabby's railing on him about, like, how can you be this disgusting, and just so disappointed in Matt for making a list like this and seeing that ugly side of him, that he just says that to her. And even then, as his, like, really beautiful, perfect movie moment, still doesn't play out the way he wants it to. It's not just going to be like, oh, wow, geez, I love you back. This is perfect.
Yeah.
Let's just go off and get married right now. This
right.
is great. And it's not going to play out that way.
I found, you know, we all, books are mirrors and windows, right? And so we see ourselves reflected in books, and we see other people's lives reflected in books. And I found when I read it that I think there was some hurt over what I experienced with that girl in my growing up time that I pined for forever, that I was waiting for Branson to be a bad guy, and he just wasn't. He just is a good guy. She deserves someone like him. You put it nicely that way. I wonder, as you were writing this story, as this story was coming to you, as you were developing out this story, figuring out who is Matt and what happens to the people in his life, I wonder how much of that has stayed intact since the first time you had your idea, and how much of that came out of maybe discovering the character or some of the things that happened while you were writing.
A lot of it stayed the same as I went through a lot of revision process on my own before it ever went on to an agent or editor or anything like that. But kind of my writing process comes out of my teaching. Like, I would never have been a writer if I hadn't first been a teacher. That wasn't even my goal when I set out teaching. Like, I just wanted to be a good teacher. And at the time, that meant a writing workshop. And my first year teaching, I was lucky enough to be a long-term sub for a good friend of mine who was just ran a writing workshop. Like, I had him in eighth grade, and it was the greatest class I ever had. And so when I started teaching, I just was lucky enough to be in his classroom, and he just gave me his lesson plan. So my first year, I just stole all of his lessons. I read his dog-eared copies of Aunt Nancy Atwell's In the Middle for a writing workshop. She's kind of our guru for writing workshop. And a couple years in, as I'm like doing this writing with my students, I'm just following that process that Nancy Atwell discovered from other published authors, because that's how writing workshop works. Do what published authors do. So as working through that process, at the beginning of every one of my stories, I start with a main character questionnaire that I stole from Nancy Atwell from her book, and I model that in front of my kids. And a couple years in, after I'd written a short story with my students that I really liked, the next year when I started that fiction writing process again with my kids, I had this new character that it was in my head, and he was self-deprecating and really into basketball, and he was really funny and socially awkward, and he was Matt. And I didn't know where I was going, but I would write 20, 30 pages of just Matt answering these interview questions just from his voice. And a lot of that ended up staying in the book. But that's still the process I use today. So it kind of starts with a character and their voice and their responses and their fears and their worries and what, you know, things that they're into.
Nice. I want to turn to you to ask questions if any of you have anything that you want to ask Jared. But before I do that, I also wanted to just ask, I know you have some notes here. Is there something about your story or your process that I didn't ask that you wanted to make sure everyone got to hear?
Not really. This was awesome, so thank you. But I think, you know, you get to the question now that, you know, I get to do some interviews and blogs and that kind of stuff, which is just surreal to me still. Because I, you know, at the end of the day, I still, on Monday, I'm going to be in cafeteria duty with eighth graders. So this is just wild to be here and be able to talk, like, at something like this. But I think just kind of the advice that you give to people and my students and anyone trying to write is that it's okay to fake it. You know, I'm starting my third book, and I still feel like a fraud. I still feel like, oh, this is all a fluke. No, it's, you're faking. And I think that's okay. I think it's okay to fake it and, you know, just pretend like you know what you're doing. So you just force yourself to keep going. And you do, like, if you were a real author, you would join, like, you know, SCBWI, and you would join critique groups, and you would reach out to book bloggers online and make that connection. Just fake it. And that's okay. And after a while, like, it kind of just becomes real for you. That's how I started teaching as well. That first year when I'm stealing Keith's notes, I had no idea what I was doing. I was totally faking it, probably for the first 2 or 3 years, till you're just, oh, I'm actually just doing this now. I'm teaching, and it's working out okay. So as a writer, like, it's okay to fake it.
Nice. I like that. Thank you, Jared. Anyone have a question for Jared about his new YA novel, or about writing, or about teaching, or maybe awful things that happened to him in middle school that you want to know about? One. I'll give you a copy of the book if you'd like. I have an extra copy. Want to check it out? Right. I'm going to read that for the people, or I'm going to say it again for the people listening on the podcast. YA is going through a real renaissance. In your experience, from your vantage point, why is that so? What's picking up about YA?
I don't know. I wish I could figure that out, other than I don't know what made it big to begin with. When I first started teaching, I really didn't know about YA that much. I was exposed in an education course to Laurie Holtz Anderson Speak and Chris Crutcher for the first time as, like, you know, in my early 20s. And the first time I read these things, I was like, oh my God, where have these things been? Like, I didn't know they existed. And maybe other people are also going through that. Because I think, you know, our high school years, they stay with you, good or bad. We all, like, those are really loom large in our minds. And I think just having that chance to go back and, you know, read through those years and live through, like, being a teenager again, whether, you know, that would be horrible for most of us, but still we kind of go back and enjoy reading other people going through that process. And I don't know what else is doing it other than, you know, getting to meet some of these people and book talk them for years. There's just incredibly brilliant, wonderful writers in the young adult world. And if you're part of that YA community on, like, Twitter and stuff, it's an incredible, supportive community that kind of, like, puts themselves on the forefront of social change. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things right now in young adult lit is just, you know, the push of we need diverse books.
Of course.
And, you know, I think that is just hugely important and awesome. And I don't know if that answers it all, but, you know, I'm glad it's getting so much bigger. Not even as a writer, but just as a teacher who's pushing young adult books, it's better than ever. Like, it's such a wonderful time to share these books with teenagers who really need it.
Between diverse books and own voices, I feel like online is really helping to mobilize these books, promote these books in ways the publishers can't either. We're learning about books because they're just getting a lot of legs and feet. And also, wonderful thing about YA is that many adults almost exclusively read YA. Are there any adults in the room that read YA? Thank you. Yeah, probably all of you. Yeah. If you don't, start. They're often more accessibly written, maybe I can say, than adult books. Some adult books, you would think they're paid by the word. But they're not Dickens. I think that YA feels real. And also, they're taking YA and just rampantly making YA books into Netflix shows, because I think there's a universal quality to them, isn't there? Any other questions? Those are great questions.
How has the reception been to this book from boys, boy audiences? Because this is a book that's there's a about romance in this book, but the main character is a boy. And so, are you seeing that your audience is frequently female, or are you seeing a nice mix?
Because you're getting the chance to read this book aloud to your students too, right? So
yeah, so
I assume there's a mix.
So the students, at least the students that I've had who have been part of the process, who are more willing to read it, have really loved it. And it's funny, as I was writing it, my worry was that it was too much of a boy book. That, you know, there's a lot of basketball in here, and there's a lot of, inside teenage guys' brain, thinking about what teenage guys think about, and talking the way teenage guys talk. So my fear was not that, it's not going to attract boy readers, that it's going to turn off everybody who's not a teenage boy, because it's not a pretty place to be sometimes.
Oh,
and, I wish
I didn't think of it that way. I was reading it going this is so great that there are so many things I can't say on microphone, you guys. come up and talk to me after we're done. But there's so many of these jokes that I'm like, I didn't have this as a kid. I didn't get to read books about, I also didn't have that opportunity to read books that way. It just didn't mobilize for me the way that maybe it did for you as you were in high school. But there's so much about this that feels like it takes time to deal with the emotions inside a guy's head. You're right. I'm just proving your point. You're right. What do guys even think about anyway? Right? Right? But
we're
you're
not
right.
That big of a mystery.
But
as deep as we think.
I think in a lot of ways too, it can act in a really beautiful way as a mirror for some of these boys who are lost and are looking for, what does this mean to care about a girl and have her go to another person? And what does that say about you?
Hi.
Yeah. It has hope, doesn't it? Children's literature has hope, which often is missing from adults' life. Adults, the life of adults. Sometimes we lose sight of hope.
I think that was an awesome point. Thank you. And that goes back to the earlier question. I think there's a misconception about YA sometimes, that it's not literary. And I think the only thing that defines something as YA is the main characters are high school kids. That's it. If you read A.S. King, you would be blown away by how literary and how just incredible it is. So that was just an awesome point. Thank you.
I have a closing question to ask you, but before that, I want to give away a copy of your book. By the way, this is the advanced reader copy that I'd love to give away to someone, and I'm sure you'd be happy to sign it over there. I'm told, though, that the hardcover, not only is there a great article that PW did, or someone did it, someone interviewed you, about the design of the cover that I'm interested in reading, and all the processes that the art director went through in designing the cover. But also, on the hardcover copy, when you pull back the jacket, there's apparently some nice embossment you could check out, some secret stuff under the jacket. I want to give this away to someone willing to share with us the name of their stuffed animal from childhood.
Yes.
And if no one raises their hand, it means
what is your
lie.
Bubby? We
What's
need
your
a name
bubby?
And description.
Oh, you're going further.
I'll go for it.
All right.
It's Moo. He is a blue cow. He is so old that he's stuffed with sawdust.
Oh, all right.
And I still have him, but I did not name how old he is because as far as my students know, I'm just going to start. So that's
where he's going.
Or sawdust.
Yeah.
Well done. Well done.
Well, follow up. Hold on. Where is Moo now? That's
he's
the bonus question. Okay, that wins. That's awesome.
Moo lives on. Moo lives on. I want to end for those of us that are that was beautiful. Yeah, getting applause. for those of us that are teachers, those of us that will be returning to students Monday morning, such as yourself, for children of all ages, I would love to just close with you the same way I close with all of my guests, Jared, and that's to say that on Monday I'll see a library full of children. Is there a message that I can bring to them, that we can bring to them from you?
Jeez.
You've been in a checkmate relationship for
and maybe say it into the mic so that the guy whose music was playing earlier isn't overpowering you.
Yeah, I think I'm going to totally rip off another brilliant author right now. When I'm thinking about my own kids, I think the number one thing from Wonder in R.J. Palacios is just choose kind.
Beautiful. Round of applause for Jared Reck, everyone. Short History of a Girl Next Door is available next door. He'll be signing over there. Thanks for joining us.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 350 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. And Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with the books they'll love. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect any ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Tony Yuli shares Thank You Bees, a beautiful and deceptively simple picture book about giving thanks for all that's provided to us. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumor has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favorite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.